Rethke's poem, like all proper poetry, doesn't make sense. I don't know how familiar this poem is to you, but in my English major world, The Waking by Theodore Rethke is a famous poem. The Poetry Foundation, about 8 years ago, made some videos as part of something called a Favorite Poem Project, and one of the poems was The Waking, and the poem is read and shared by someone named Tom Moran, and Tom Moran is the head custodian of an elementary school about 20 miles west of Chicago in Illinois. He finds the poem life-affirming and loves how the words fit together. It just flows, he says. I don't disagree with his experience of the poem, but it's not my experience. It has been a favorite of mine since college, which is also where Tom Moran encountered it. I think that the big reason that people know about this poem is this. It gets taught in English classes. It's short, it's written in iambic pentameter, and it's also an example of a villanelle, and it's probably one of three poems that gets trotted out all the time as an example of what a villanelle is. And so, you know, you bring one of those and you teach it in the class, you got to save the other two for the quiz, so you're going to run into all three. It's going to be on the syllabus, that villanelle form, so there you go. The Waking is going to be something that you run across if you spend any time at all in English classes. This is nothing against the poem. It's nice that people know about it. I am fascinated by the poem, but I'm fascinated with it because of the way it works against our normal ways of making sense. I'm glad that to Tom Moran, it feels like it just flows. In my experience of the poem, I don't often see a reason for how we get from one line to another. So here's those first two lines again. I wake to sleep and take my waking slow. Next line, I feel my fate in what I cannot fear. The lines are just sort of next to each other. And I think the effect of the poem or the experience of the poem just comes from those juxtapositions, those putting one line up against another line. And what happens if we put these two things next to each other? Are they going to be like magnets that attract or repel one another? Are there going to be any sparks that fly? This is not our normal way of making sense. This is playing around with sense. In the standard ways of making sense, something makes sense when the numbers add up, when one thing inevitably leads to another. Something makes sense when we find the box it fits into. Something makes sense when we are able to tie it up with a bow. Think of that image, a package tied with a bow. It's a gift, but it's also a consumable. It's something that capitalist commodity culture can understand. It's transactionable and saleable. You can go get one. The gift costs exactly this much, and you can buy it today, take it home, and use it. Set it up on your counter, push the button, and you will receive your food pellet. The fascinating thing about The Waking is it does not make sense in this way. It's not just usable. It's a disruption of our normal ways of making sense. It will never quite make sense in a tidy, it fits right into this little box kind of way. And that's why the poem can be such a significant experience, if we're open to experiencing it. The Waking, that poem, isn't useful. It doesn't make sense. Instead, if we let it, it opens up our senses. It opens us to our own senses. We think by feeling. What is there to know? The point of the poem isn't what that line means as much as how does that line feel to you? How do you encounter that line? When you hear that line, what do you feel? Where do those feelings go in your body? I hear my being dance from ear to ear. How does that feel? The waking is a break from workaday reality. I love nonsense. I love profound unproductivity. Productivity too often feels like it's just all about creating consumables. I hear the word productivity and I think stock market. I think Black Friday sales. I hear economists counting widgets. These forces are so strong in our culture, and they work strongly against allowing us to simply be human. In her book, Rest is Resistance, A Manifesto, Tricia Hersey calls this dehumanizing force grind culture. Tricia Hersey calls herself the Nap Bishop, and she runs something called the Nap Ministry. I love this effort. It's all about the spiritual practice of liberation from grind culture, from capitalist commodity culture, from white supremacist culture. Here's one of her stories. So Tricia Hersey tells us this. As a child, she says, I would watch my grandmother, Aura, as she sat on her plastic-covered yellow couch and meditated for 30 minutes every single day. She fled her home in Mississippi with thousands of other African Americans during the Great Migration of the 1950s. Aura floated up north on a spaceship built from uncertainty and hope, and she landed in Chicago. She raised 8 children while dodging poverty, racism, and the invisibility of being a Black woman in America. Her commitment to resting her eyes every day for 30 minutes was radical. Her ability to demand space to just be was a form of resistance. While my grandmother rested her eyes, I would tiptoe around her home, trying not to wake her up. I always thought she was sleeping while sitting up. I was curious about her rest practice and thought she was so eccentric. Whenever I could inquire if she was sleeping, her response was always the same. Every shut eye ain't sleep. I'm resting my eyes and listening for what God wants to tell me. While all the world around her was attempting to crush her spirit, she rested and resisted the beast of grind culture. Hold that image in your mind for a moment. Aura, sitting on her plastic-covered yellow couch, eyes closed. Maybe imagine yourself in Hersey's shoes, tiptoeing into the room. There she is, sitting on the couch, her eyes closed. What is she doing? We do not live in a culture that values rest. Or, I should say, we live in a culture that only values rest insofar as it is something that enables you to be more productive, to do more work. We don't live in a culture that values just being. Interrupting that culture is a political act. Tricia Hersey's Nap Ministry is guided by Black theology and Black history. It is aimed at dismantling white supremacy culture and capitalist commodity culture because they have duped and dehumanized us all. This resting that she's advocating is deeply political racial justice work. But it's also profoundly spiritual. It's about helping bodies and spirits heal and connect and be whole. It's about helping people connect with their deepest self, their truest self. It's about fulfillment and meaningfulness that breaks out of the kind of meaning that grind culture tries to tether us to. It's about creating space and time to feel all those feelings that grind culture doesn't know what to do with and feels threatened by. A couple of Sundays ago in this room, we hosted a One Love vigil in partnership with Saratoga Pride to mourn the loss of LGBTQ life at Club Q in Colorado due to gun violence. It was a chance for those of us in the LGBTQ community, those of us who are allies, to make space together, to break out of the day-to-day from the grind and create some time, and we could just feel what we feel. Frightened, hurt, grieving. Grief doesn't make any sense to the world of getting and spending. It wants you to get over it and do some getting and spending. Grief is about sensing and feeling and connecting heart to heart, spirit to spirit, soul to soul. Put it up against grind culture and creating space for grief is a political act. Being spiritual, tending to our spiritual wholeness and the spiritual wholeness of those around us is a deeply political act. The rituals that we do every Sunday here, lighting the chalice, holding silence together, sharing joys and sorrows, the ritual of stones and water, the ritual of just singing together, none of this makes sense. If it makes sense at all to the getting and spending world, it makes sense because it helps us get more energy for more getting and spending. Your existence does not need to be justified by your ability to get and spend, by your ability to be productive and efficient. Frightened by rest, grind culture wants us to believe that real rest and relaxation is a luxury. It's expensive. And it must be earned. Rest is about more than taking to your bed, although I am concerned that some of you are not getting enough sleep. Rest is about remembering and connecting with your inherent worth and dignity. Tricia Hersey says, rest is as natural as breathing and waking up. Rest is part of our nature. Resting is about getting people back to their truest selves. Rest is anything that slows you down enough to allow your body and mind to connect in the deepest way. You don't have to earn rest. You don't have to go someplace special to get rest. Your natural being is always with you, and it is a source of rest. It knows how to rest. There is deep wisdom in your body. Rest is about reconnecting as natural beings. Hersey calls us to respect our bodies for what they are, a divine dwelling. Breaking away from cultures of violence and dehumanization, we can realize perhaps that great nature has another thing to do to you and me. Something that's not what grind culture wants to do to you and me. What nature has to do to you and me is help us realize that we are humans being. There's a line of a Mary Oliver poem that's tugging my sleeve here that says, you only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Where we have to go is the most natural way of going. It is the way of reverie and reverence. It is the rest that lies in saying, God bless the ground. I shall walk softly there. It is the grace of rest in hearing an invitation to take the lively air and, lovely, learn by going where to go. Listen. I hear my being dance from ear to ear. In this snow globe world of longer nights and short days, may you hear an invitation from great nature to delve into the deeply political practice of reverie and reverence. May you hear an invitation from great nature to the deeply healing and spiritual work of deprogramming yourself and others from white supremacy culture and grind culture. May you make deeply meaningful nonsense in this time of long dark nights. May you make space for rest and recovery, for dance and daydream, reverie and reverence. Just a few more words from Tricia Hersey. Resting is an embodied practice and a lifelong unraveling. It is not something that can be trendy, quick, or shallow. Resting is ancient, slow, and connected work that will take hold of you in ways that may be surprising. Let deprogramming from grind culture surprise you. Let your entire being slowly begin to shift. Get lost in rest. Pull up the blankets, search for softness, and be open to the ways rest will surprise and calm you. Let us wake to sleep. So may it be.